Meow. Meow, 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 meow.
Tell us, Chandler, tell us.
Trigger warning. This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from the hidden hills of Hyrule. We stimulate your auditory canals with the soothing sounds of sacrilege against the state, causing you to question obedience and laugh as Western civilization collapses. Are you laughing, Michael? Are you laughing, yeah, Dan?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
I am. Always.
Speak up, Dan. Like you're on radio, son.
Pretend I'm on the radio.
Yeah, nah. You are on the radio.
And so, we should mention that the Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license, which allows use and reuse by everyone except who, Dan?
Governments, I believe.
States. The state. Governments and employees of governments. And, you know, some would argue, it's actually been brought forth by Derek Slopey, that anybody who pays taxes is a government employee. So we get to make fun of almost everybody if they use anything that's BIPCOT licensed. You know, speaking of the BIPCOT license, interesting thing happened to me on the way to the show tonight or the other night. I was searching on this thing called WorldCat, which sounds like a world database for kitty cats, but it's actually a world database for library catalogs. And you can search the ISBN number of a book or the title of a DVD or record or CD, and it'll tell you, most libraries are on this system, and it'll tell you, like, every library in the world that has the thing, which is pretty cool because, you know, I'm an author, I've written a bunch of books, and, like, they're actually through a distributor that gets them in libraries, and the same with my DVD distributor. So, like, you know, like my $30 film school book is in over 1,000 libraries worldwide, and the you know, some of my other books are in, you know, a couple hundred libraries, and you know, Gun Training for the Non-Aggression Principle DVDs in, like, you know, 15 libraries, and you know, Guns and Weed: The Road to Freedom's in like 25 libraries, and I haven't checked it in like a year, and I checked it. And there's a new addition to a library that has my DVD, Gun Training for the Non-Aggression Principle, this instruction DVD I made with this guy named Jared Waltz. It is in the FBI library in Quantico, Virginia.
Really?
Yeah. That's kind of bizarre to me because it's like, I mean, first of all, I'm really glad I'm not, like, shooting speed anymore and really paranoid all the time like I was about 21 years ago. No, I never did a lot of speed, but I did a few times. You know, like, I actually had this friend that was in NA that relapsed after like 3 or 4 years sober and then like hit bottom really hard for like 6 months and nearly died and then came back and got clean again. And during that 6 months, he was living in the Tenderloin in this really crappy apartment in San Francisco, literally across the street from the FBI building. Like, you looked out his crack house window with the aluminum foil covering the windows. And you know what you're looking at? You're looking at the roof of the FBI building with a bunch of, like, parabolic radar, like, telescope antennas pointed at his window. Can you imagine what that would do to your head on crack?
No.
Yeah.
Interesting that the FBI building is located in that area. Kind of says something, I think.
Yeah. Well, but this is, like, you know, we all talk about, like, we're probably on a government list, watch list, but it's like, whether or not I'm on a government watch list, something I made is actually on the list of things to watch at the FBI. Isn't that weird?
That is weird. I wonder, do you think it's just because they actually need real training and good training?
I think it's keep an eye out for like, citizens who want, you know, I think it's, well, it's hard to tell because when I saw it there, like, you could actually search what else they have. It's a, you know, publicly accessible database. And I'm sure searching the database of the FBI library puts you on another list. But searching it, and so I started searching, like, other gun training stuff. Like, I looked up, they had nothing by Boston Tea Party. And he's kind of a big name of, like, you know, either for training or for watch list stuff, I would think they would have his stuff. And then I looked up, like, a bunch of other, the only gun training thing that I looked up that they had was all the stuff by Misad Ayoub, but he's a former cop, you know, so, like, cops would like his training, I think. He's from Maine, too, isn't he, or Vermont? I forget.
I think he's from Vermont.
Yeah.
But he writes for Backwoods Home, right?
Yeah, he's good. Yeah. He's good. But, you know, and they had a lot of, like, you know, they have, like, books on lone wolf terrorism, and they had Steal This Book by Abbie Hoffman. So, you know, they definitely had, like, books of, like, what you're supposed to look out for. But then they also had training. They did have gun training stuff. And then they also had, like, just, you know, books that any library would have. Like, they had the new, like, autobiography of billionaire Elon Musk. So,
I don't know. Who that is.
The founder of, I think he's a libertarian. I think everybody likes him. He runs that electronic car company, Tesla. And I think he was co-founder of eBay. And Yeah.
I wonder if they have, I'm sure they probably do, the book Unintended Consequences.
I don't even want to search that on the FBI. Like, I don't even want to like admit I know that book exists on the FBI database, but
yeah.
I am by saying it on radio. So, but here's the thing. Okay, that DVD we put out under Creative Commons license. Now, if I put that DVD out now, everything I'm putting out now is under this new license we made called the BIPCOT license. What would be my recourse, and would I actually contact the government if I'd put out that DVD, BIPCOT, no government license, and found out that the FBI had a copy of it? I could, like, literally send them a cease and desist. You know, I could say, you know, here's a check for the price of what you paid for this. Please remove it from your library. It's not for use by governments.
I wonder if they'd take you seriously. You could do it, like, on YouTube, too.
I know. I don't know. I don't know if I'd have the guts to do that. I think I probably would, but it'd be pretty funny.
Yeah, it would be funny to watch, especially their response. I don't think they'd know how to respond to something like that. They wouldn't know if it's a joke or what.
Yeah, well, then they also, I mean, really, like, what right would I have to do that with something that's being sold publicly, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, the BIPCOT license would more cover it if they, like, copied it without paying for it.
Right.
Then I'd have recourse. But, you know, they probably bought a copy of it with taxpayer money. The funny thing is, my DVD selling company, when they sell stuff to libraries, they generally charge them like 10 times like the commercial price. Like, you know, if you buy it, it's $12. If the library buys it, it's $120. That's how it's done with libraries. Did you know that? They pay a lot more for books and CDs generally.
I wonder if that's why they have such a limited selection then.
Maybe. What do you think, Dan? How's it work where you live? Anything, what's your equivalent of FBI? MI5?
Yeah, I suppose there's actually, what is it? They started some new department, some sort of like...
Department of Enjoining Good and Forbidding Evil?
That's the thing, basically. I don't know. I've actually not been in a library for years. Libraries sort of creep me out here, but like
I know it's just a place for like homeless people to go like wash their groin, and a place for people to use computers who don't have them.
Yeah, that's what I see a lot.
Some of them are so limited. Like, there's one that's like really close to me, and it is so limited. It's unbelievable. Actually, the books I have in the house have got more depth. You know, it's that bad, and you wonder what's the point in even keeping it open.
They raised the sales tax in my town like a penny to pay for like local projects, and it's supposed to be a voluntary tax, which is ridiculous, but like people actually vote on it every year, every few years, and every time they vote on it every 4 years, less people, like it's squeaking by like 54% now. I don't know what they're going to do when it doesn't pass sometime. They'll probably just raise everyone's property tax. But one of the things that they did was like they're building a new library, and it's a town with like 50,000 people that already has a pretty decent public library. And I get these like four color 20 page pamphlets in the mail every few months of like why we need this library, even after it's already like decided. And it's like, I'm like, library, man, that's like, why do you need to build a new library? You know, I mean, if nothing else, like, why not just build a room with rows of computer terminals in it?
Well, and think about how much money they're wasting just printing up those flyers and sending them out.
I know. I mean, for the amount of money they're printing those flyers, they could probably have a room somewhere with computer terminals in it and, like, pay someone to sit there and watch it.
Well, I don't know how it works in my town. We have a small library, and I got to admit, I kind of like it. I've always been kind of a library geek, though.
Oh, yeah, I used to go to the library, and, like, I mean, it was like my... you know, I'd go, first of all, I'd go smoke pot behind the library, but then I'd go in and actually like hang out in the library and read and learn. You know, when I was a kid, it was like what I did, a teenager, was like, it was my like sanctuary from the world, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Well, we have a pretty decent library. It's an older one, you know, all granite with the stone pillars, and inside it looks really, yeah, and it looks really old timey. And I haven't been there because usually I only take my clients there as a quiet place to kind of go and chill. And I noticed there it's all under construction and they moved it temporarily to this old hospital. And I don't know. I know they had put forth a bond initiative, I guess.
Yeah.
They had put one through during the last election season. I didn't pay much attention to it, but I guess it must have passed because they're sinking a whole bunch of money into it. So I don't really know what they would be doing, but yeah.
What do you think, Dan? I was going to say, I see it here, like, every time, like, say, maybe some council somewhere, some, like, say, local sort of, you know, local elected councils here decide they're going to close libraries, suddenly, like, all these kind of lefties who never go to the library and who never really mention it, they all come out the woodwork and they go, this is the government trying to stop our kids from learning, you know, and this kind of thing, and, like, and it's weird, man. And then they go, we should spend more money on libraries, but up until then, they never ever mentioned them. You know, like, I've seen that so many times.
Don't you see that with lefties a lot? I mean, they come out of the woodwork for all kinds of things that you normally don't see them for. I think it's just that whole get out there and be heard.
Yeah, it's really, with the internet, like, it really doesn't matter. Like, a computer, like, you don't need books. And you know, one of the title for tonight's show that I want to call it, it's a quote from Frank Zappa, and it's about the difference between the mainstream and the underground. He said, "The mainstream comes to you, but you have to go to the underground," and that's actually always been how it is. But people have argued that since the internet, that's no longer true, because I mean, you could be the most obscure like band in Belarus playing in a cave and put yourself on the internet, like in Chicago and London can hear you that minute. We'll be back with more on Freedom Fiends after this trip to Market Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's Antiwar.com.
So, Dan, you're a postman. Do you like Bukowski?
I like Bukowski. I've got his name tattooed on my arm, so I'd probably go with yes.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I didn't know that. Awesome. What are the tattoos you got, man?
Oh, I've got loads. I've got an entire sleeve on my right arm, so it's a lot to go into.
Okay.
Actually, I've got a lot of weird occult symbols on my arm, as you may have imagined, you know, from someone.
You know, Barack
like me.
Obama is a liar, a socialist, and his feet stink.
I knew that.
I heard that, yeah. It's come up once or twice.
Yeah.
That would make a funny tattoo.
I actually wanted to get Do Not Resuscitate tattooed like across my chest, and Katie was banning me from doing it.
She should ban your wife. She's like, something doing that.
She was worried that, you know, someone that, say, works for an ambulance service might take that literally, you know?
Well, I think they would. Yeah, yeah, or they could.
It's pretty explicit. It's written right there.
Yeah, yeah.
It depends on the styling, I suppose.
Well, I don't know if it's a legal contract or not, but, you know, I mean, people have bracelets that say that. I mean, it's usually in conjunction with a document, but did you know that that CPR will not work on someone with severe asthma like me?
No.
Yeah. I'm supposed to get a bracelet that says I have severe asthma, so they know that. But
yep. That's interesting, because I take CPR every 2 years, or 1 or 2 years, and I've never heard that.
Yeah, well, it was told to me by my pulmonologist. And I want to talk a little bit about my life goals and stuff. We were going to talk about Bill Cosby. We'll do that in the next segment. But I just want to kind of talk about like the weird situation I've come in the past 7 months by like having this severe asthma to the point where I really can't do my show every day. I mean, I can do this show like an hour a week tops, and then I have to recover for days because it harms my throat because I'm so messed up from the asthma. And I'm pretty much still like fighting to live, you know. I mean, I have asthma attacks every 2 or 3 days that are kind of severe, and doctor says it's like I should be better by now, but I'm not, and it's a, you know, it's an exceptional case, and I don't even know what to do about it. And but basically, like, I'm in good spirits. I'm not, you know, I'm not suicidal or anything like that. I'm basically happy as could be with dealing with something like that all the time. But part of the thing that's interesting about it is, like, all of a sudden, I'm not doing the thing every day that had kind of come to define me for about 4 years now. You know, like, basically, I was like, oh, I do talk radio. That's what I do. I'm a talk show host. I talk every day, and people listen, and I have fun. And, like, you know, the thing is, I've sort of set this show up so everyone's replaceable, including me, to the point where, like, I'm barely on the show. I'm just kind of behind the scenes. I'm doing the editing. I'm doing the booking. You know, I come on before each show and get everybody hooked up and do sound checks, and then don't do the show usually. And it's very strange because all of a sudden, like, I kind of don't have a purpose in life, and I'm kind of okay with it. Although I'm kind of looking for, like, okay, if I can get through this asthma thing and get better, what's the next thing I'm going to do? But I'm kind of like, I'm kind of done, like, not done with talk radio, but I'm kind of like done with the need to do it every day and define myself as it. I've just been watching lots of movies and TV, and like, I'm really happy with two other things. Like The Fiends, I'm really happy with. All the co-hosts are great. You guys are all wonderful. I'm really happy with Fiend Phone, this thing I helped, you know, help Derek Slopey bring into the world that's going to be around forever. And it's like, it revolutionizes people doing media. And I'm really happy with the Bipcot license, which kind of started as a joke, but it's kind of like catching on as a real thing. So, you know, I feel like I've done some things lately, and I feel like, here's the thing, like, okay, I'm like, well, I can't talk a lot every day, but if I have things to say, like, what I was thinking is, well, there's ad time on The Fiends, and there's a couple ads coming up available, and I was like, well, I could, if I really have something to say, I could make a 30 or 60 second ad, voice it once, or have someone else voice it, and then, like, it's played every day on radio, you know, on like 34 stations or something. And it's like, and then I started thinking about it. I'm like, I don't really have anything to say that I want to like sum up in 30 seconds that I'm not already saying. I mean, the only thing I really want to say is like, the governments are horrible, avoid them at all costs, and tell everyone that. And like, that's what every Fiends host does all the time on The Fiends anyway. So it's like, I don't really need to do that. It's just a strange, interesting situation to be in. Comments?
Yeah, I imagine it's quite the transition. You, ever since I've known you, you've always been so driven to get this high-quality, meaningful media out into the world. So for you to sit back and just kind of chill, it must be an interesting feeling.
It's kind of hard. It takes the ability to like step out of your ego.
Oh, I can imagine.
Like, you know, well, yeah, The Fiends are great, and I'm not on them. It's weird. I built that.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty Talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Now, Gargadier, Channel Zampier, and Dave. Topic and the title of the show is Frank Zappa Quote. It's the mainstream comes to you, but you have to go to the underground. And we're going to talk about that in both the sense of the content creator and the content consumer. And, you know, I think all of us have been all three of those things at some point or another. And I've been doing semi-professional music, filmmaking, and book authoring across the cusp of going from analog to digital. Like, you know, I used to record on multi-track tape in studios and put out vinyl records. And, you know, then now, like, I'm like, CDs, that's ancient technology. It's got to be MP3s. And the same with books. You know, like, I'm a published author, and some of the books that I wrote when I first started writing books, I mean, it's changed even in, like, the past 10 to 12 years. Like, the first book I got a publisher for was in, you know, the year 2001, I think. And, like, I had to send out, like, paper copies of, you know, sample chapters and outlines. And, you know, by 3 or 4 years later, even by, like, 2005, 2006, pretty much most agents wanted just, you know, send me an email of it. You know, they didn't want paper copies. There's probably a few still, like, old somewhere, you know, agents that want paper. But, yeah, I don't think so. It's all about the bits and stuff. So, I mean, the main thing, too, is, like, the ability to create easily and share easily with Java computers and make perfect digital copies around the world immediately. Also, like, really vastly changed the idea of the monopoly of the gatekeeper of the record label and the publishing company. I mean, those things still exist, but it's challenging for them. So, what do you guys think?
Yeah, I think it's going to continue. The adoption of instantaneous media through the internet is gaining steam. Yeah, you know, you may not be able to get your book published and get it in Barnes & Nobles or Walmart or something.
Do they still have Barnes & Nobles?
Well, we have one in our town.
I was saying for years, like, I was saying, yeah, man, I'm a published author and you can get my books, you know. I mean, they're, like, actually in stores. It's not self-published. You can go, like, into any Borders Books. And, like, somebody told me at some point, like, you know, Borders Books has been out of business for a year. Yeah. I didn't even know that. But I was, like, a professional author. So same thing with Tower Records. Actually, they went out of business owing me some money for some DVDs.
Well, Dan and I were talking earlier today, like, we both like obscure remixes and bootlegs. Like, I think I've talked about how I collect bootlegs. And, you know, back in the day, it was snail mail tape trading, or we had a music trolling store. Yeah. We had a music store right down the road from me. And one of the things I loved about them was I would go in and you could find the silver press CDs of bootleg shows, you know, and before that it was, you know, the vinyl pressed bootleg.
Before that it was the BBC Peel sessions. Well, that was kind of the mainstream version, but.
Yeah. And, you know, I used to go down there all the time and, you know, I got a lot of Nine Inch Nails and David Bowie bootlegs, stuff like that. And, you know, eventually they stopped selling the bootlegs, and then shortly after, they just stopped, you know, they went out of business. I think this was right after Napster became really big. So, I mean, it's kind of bittersweet. You know, we had that media at the touch of a finger, although when I first got into Napster, you know, it used to take about, 3-4 hours just to download one song. You know, and now you can get whole albums off iTunes or whatever service you may choose in, like, a minute or two. But it's kind of bittersweet, you know, with bookstores and music stores kind of going under in the wake of the digital revolution.
I sort of used to fetishize books and, like, you know, love the smell of them and love to touch them and pet them. And, like, someday I'll be an author and, like, my book will be published into, you know, paper with the force of 1,000 pounds of dynamite it takes to run the press into the ink, into the paper pulp of 10,000 copies or whatever. Like, you know, I had this poetic vision of it. But and that kind of carried with me through a while, but I was a really early adopter of MP3s. I was a really early adopter of CDs and DVDs and like digital filmmaking, and really like it was pretty easy to shuck off the final bit of like, oh, the sacredness of the physical object. And like my wife too, like she loves books. We have over 1,000 books in the basement. They're all hers. She's read every one of them twice to three times. And she didn't want to get a Kindle because she was like, oh, you know, that's, I want to be able to touch the paper. And she, I got her a Kindle. Like we tried one in a store. She's like, oh, this isn't so bad. And now she loves it and never orders books.
Oh, same here.
But here's, I had the final nail in the coffin for like physical media the other day. I ordered this book, really good book by a guy I know. The book's called Zen Guitar by a guy named Phil Sudo, who was very influential on me, this book was. And I interviewed this guy like 3 weeks before he died. He was dying of cancer. He was on the DVD extras of my DIY or Die, How to Survive as an Independent Artist DVD. And it's a very bittersweet interview. It's like, you can tell he's dying. And he's like trying really hard to like have the energy to say the words he wants to say. And I was like, you know, I haven't read that book in a while. I'd like to have that book. And I ordered a copy on Amazon and, you know, got used. I ordered it used on Amazon. And I got it, and it was like, I opened it up, and it smelled like mold, and I immediately had an asthma attack.
Ouch.
And I was like, physical media causes me sickness, you know? So...
I like the wee things you get on secondhand books, like, because most of my books are like secondhand, and I love, like, I've got books, like, I've got a copy of Down and Out in Paris and London, George Orwell, and there's like this really nice note inside, like someone like writing to someone saying like, be inspired and all this kind of thing, and like it's a really old copy, and I just love that kind of thing, gives it a bit of character.
Yeah, I would agree with that. There's a bookstore in Hollowell, Maine, which is the next town over from me. And the lady, it's like this hole in the wall in between these two stores. And it's literally probably like 6 feet wide, just a few bookshelves lined. And you kind of walk in there and just grab a couple of books, and she has a jar, and you leave the money in the jar, and it's like open all day. Sometimes she's there, sometimes she's not, but you can find really cool books. And there, right across the street, there's an antique bookstore that I haven't checked out yet, but I'm going to. And I really do love stuff like that, you know. I love going in there. I think I went in there one night. I was going to a bar with a couple of friends because it's right next to a bar, and as I was walking out of the bar, I stopped in there to take a look, and I found George Carlin's When Will Jesus Bring the Pork Chops, you know.
I watched a George Carlin DVD last night, man. I forgot how great that guy is, and really forgot how influential he is on, you know, everything we like, and how mind-blowing he is. Like, I was watching this thing, it's called You're All Diseased.
Diseased Now, yeah.
Yeah, is the name of it, and it was like, it was filmed when, like, I don't know, like,
it was 2001.
Was president. Yeah, it was a long time. It was like, and it was before 9/11, right?
No, it was right after 9/11.
Okay, it was right after 9/11. And he was basically saying, like, you know, he's making fun of the airport security theater that doesn't really do anything. And yep. he was saying stuff that, like, I can't believe anybody said anywhere. I mean, he was saying, like, I like the fact that people can go blow up a market and kill 300 people, and I couldn't believe he was saying some of this stuff.
Yeah, he was really controversial and ahead of his time. I mean, one of my greatest regrets was he came to Boston. It was actually the year before he died, and I was going to go, and, you know, circumstances, whatever. I was like, well, I can't make it this time. I'll catch him next time, because he comes like every 2 or 3 years to Boston. And I didn't go, man.
And
I'm kicking myself now, yeah.
Yep.
But,
Oh, no, yeah. This was recorded in 1999.
Okay, maybe it was the next one that was recorded in 2001, because I just listened to one of them the other night, because I have all of them on my computer.
And it was released in 1999.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting as well. See if you watch some of those compilations of George Carlin, and they've got like different sort of bits from different shows. It's interesting to watch the way he kind of changed over the years.
Yeah.
He took it from when, even when his first stuff, he was quite a suited, nice guy. And then he sort of started looking like Bukowski in the 70s, like more of a hippie version. But you know, when he did the characters, that, like the weatherman and all that kind of thing. But then in the 80s, it was kind of, a lot of his stuff seemed quite observational. You know, like, yeah. I remember a lot of comedy at Pets and things like that. But then as he got older, it seemed to get kind of more political and that kind of thing.
Yeah, he was really, like, in his last couple of them, I don't want to say angry, but he was kind of had that angry vibe. He was just like, you know, forget it, you know, and just this is the way it is. And I'm getting up there in years and I'm going to say whatever. And, you know, he really didn't seem to care what the critics would think anymore.
You know, he's one of only one or two comedians I can think of, really, like only one of like five or six famous people I can think of who's ever like repeatedly strongly talked about the stupidity of voting, you know?
Yeah.
Like most comedians, I would say, have a libertarian bent in them. There's something, if you're up there doing comedy, there's something in you that like wants freedom. I think it goes hand in hand, but
oh, yeah.
Most comedians kind of fall short of it. You know, they're like, they're libertarian at heart, but they want to vote Democrat. They want to vote, you know, they think government can change things. And George Carlin and I would say Doug Stanfield are like the only two comedians I can think of who just rail on the stupidity of voting.
Yeah, well, his last one, Life is Worth Losing, I think it was called.
Carlin.
And he talked about, you know, that whole absurdity. He was like, you know, we have owners, you know, and voting, you're just voting for the next spokesperson who's going to explain to you why they're, you know, doing the things they're doing to you. That's the cleaner version. I mean, he was very...
I would say he's probably closer to anarchist than libertarian.
Yeah, in his later years, I really got that vibe.
I think it was, well, I noticed that I read something once and it was like when he was a younger man, he was like, he was arrested at a Lenny Bruce show. It was one of those ones, and like from what I read, he the reason why he was arrested was because he was asked for ID by a cop and he said that he didn't believe in government ID. So they pulled him in, which is interesting. Well, that's a true story.
Yeah, so he's always kind of had that bent to it. Well, I remember like reading a couple of Bukowski stories, you know, and he was talking about hanging out with the anarchists in L.A., you know, and granted they were the biker kind that were a little more shady, but
we'll be back after this trip to the market.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
The Michigan Peace and Liberty Coalition is proud to present the 3rd Annual Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest. It will be held at the Circle Pine Center in Delton, Michigan from August 7th through the 10th. There will be vending, discussions, presentations, all sorts of activities for children and adults, and bacon, lots of bacon. Round up your friends and family and get them registered today at miplc.org. That's miplc.org. Dogs welcome. Longer leashes recommended.
Bavaria. Bavarian Gulch. It's Freedom Fiends.
Worms. Gulch.
Secretly planning liberty. Centrally planning liberty. And then disseminating it through osmosis. What is it has done?
Have you heard the great libertarian conspiracy of how libertarians want to take over and leave you alone?
Yeah, that's awesome. So we're talking about media and fun stuff like that and how it's changed with the internet. And the title today is a Frank Zappa quote. It's the mainstream comes to you, but you have to go to the underground. And I guess I'm arguing that's sort of changed from both a content consumer and content creator point of view since the internet. But I love the internet. It was like I was waiting for it all along before it even existed. I mean, I used to like...
Yeah.
You know, I was born in 64 and like in, you know, 75. I mean, I used to like write to pen pals in the back of magazines because I wanted to have friends far away around the world. And I used to like... put, you know, when I was younger than that, I put a note in a bottle and threw it in the lake and like was really happy when somebody like an hour away in Buffalo wrote me and said they found it. And, you know, and I used to make like radio transmitters and try to do like pirate radio when I was 12. I just wanted to like always communicate with the world. And as soon as the internet came, I was like, I've been waiting for this my whole life, man. I got on it in like 91, like before the web, you know. So, you know, the thing that kind of bugs me about today is these darn kids today, pretty much like they're really not content creators anymore. They're mostly like content consumers and content raters, you know, like
if you go to
most young people's like, you know, social networking pages, all it is pictures of them with their fancy iPhone in a mirror. Like that's today's culture. And I guess I sound like an old guy, but I'm like I know people that don't even have a computer. All they have is like a tablet, and it's like hard to create things on a tablet. And
yeah.
I don't know.
Yes, I think in a way, kind of like, if you want to put it this way, maybe everyone, Katie and I were talking about this, everyone's sort of trying to create something, but I think some people sort of do it differently, like, whereas you get people who like to create, like, media content, you know, music, art and things, some people who don't have that type of creativity seem to do it by, like, say, having kids. I know this might sound weird,
yeah,
but like when you think about it, everything that people put themselves into is some form of creation, because it's almost like the only way you can play God. You know what I mean? what's the ultimate point of God? Creation, isn't it?
I don't know, man. I got one kid and I love her to death and I thank God every day I had her, but I don't want to create anymore, that's for sure.
Yeah, I got a vasectomy in 99 at Planned Parenthood. I know Planned Parenthood's in the news this week, and people are yelling at it. And I don't like things that are government funded, but you know, they don't just do abortions. I gotta say,
yeah,
that.
They do
like,
a lot of good, you know, things.
I had to actually go through abortion protesters in 1999 to get in there to get a vasectomy in Marin, California. But yeah, man, so back to like the consumer thing. I mean, I guess I should be glad, because like the fact that there's so many consumers and raters means that there's an audience for things that people do that are good, and there's an audience for the fiends. The audience for the fiends is not huge. Like, you know, it's not mainstream. Like, there's a lot of libertarian people that make videos and do internet radio shows that are bigger than us and have a bigger following than us. But I never thought that being the biggest was the coolest thing. You know, like think about all the bands that like people like that they're like, oh, I liked them back when they were on an independent label, when they were playing to 200 people and nobody knew who they were, and then they got signed and now I don't like them. Like the Fiends are the band before they got signed, you know.
Well, yeah, and the thing that I think is so great about the Fiends is we kind of do things our own way. You know, we have this template that you and Nima set up, and you've given us a platform to grow and evolve, but we still stay true to our own originality, and we don't have to conform to, you know, a label or you know, a big business model. And I think, like I was telling you during the break, I mean, generally speaking, all I listen to now that Ben doesn't podcast much anymore, except for with the Fiends, the only thing I listen to now is the Fiends. I mean, once in a while, I'll listen to a couple of podcasts you guys have recommended.
I try to listen to every Fiends, and there's so much variety. It's like, yeah, I listen to Free Talk Live almost every day, part of it at least every day. And I love that every time it comes up and Free Talk Live are bragging about how cool they are, which they are, and they are pioneers. But like Ian will say, like, yeah, and like, you know, there's nobody else out there that's doing like straight up voluntarist, you know, syndicated talk radio. Well, except Michael Dean, Freedom Fiends. Like, he has to put that asterisk in every time.
Yeah.
I like that.
That's awesome.
Yep.
Arms.
I was listening to their first ever episode today. It's pretty funny.
I'd like
it's
to
good.
Hear that.
It's good, but yeah, it's good. It's on torrent only. Mark Edge went by Manwich back then. And they had a third host that I don't know who it is. And they're on one station in Florida. They like actually went into the station to do the show.
That's dedication right there.
It is, man. All right.
Wake up and smell the freedom. One of the easiest things you can do to help Liberty is to torrent Freedom Fiends episodes to help keep them drone-proof. You can set up your home computer to download and share Freedom Fiends archives over BitTorrent. You can even set up scheduling so it only shares while you're asleep or at work. Put your unused computing power to work and help keep the Freedom Fiends around well into the future. Simply go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Torrent Club link and learn how to torrent and share Freedom Fiends archives.
Worms. On 8 trips.
This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting through the Limerkenny Re-Education Centre's low orbit ion cannon, high atop financial beast plaza, on the artificial satellite Libter 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. The Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT NEE government licence, and this allows reuse by anyone except for governments. You can learn more at BIPCOT.org. I'm Dan Green, talking to Chandler St. Pierre. Michael Dean has dropped off into cyberspace somewhere for now. And we were basing a lot of our chat in the first hour around a Frank Zappa quote, and it was, the mainstream comes to you, but you have to go to the underground. And we're kind of relating that to modern media and the internet and, you know, how sort of differences, like we said, well, now you can hear things instantaneously that, you know, happened, like someone could write a song and you hear it, like, just straight away, and it could be on the other side of the world. And that's kind of what we're doing here, isn't it? I suppose, you know, we're talking instantaneously over Fiendphone. Do you think I plugged everything enough there? Was that good?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I mean, it's interesting because, like Michael was saying in the last hour, you know, he's always dreamed of doing radio, and he's had pen pals, and he, you know, he loves to communicate and all that. And I think this is the culmination of it because, you know, you're in Scotland, I'm in Maine, and Michael is in Wyoming. And, you know, the three of us were chatting on late night radio over the miracle of the internet and satellites and radio stations and Fiendphone, which, if people don't know, Fiendphone is the Freedom Fiends, and hopefully many others, alternative to voice over internet protocol programs like Skype. So you can learn more at fiendphone.org for that. So yeah, media creation, you know, from consumer perspective and content perspective. I think you and I both, Dan, we are big fans of Charles Bukowski, the renowned American gutter poet. And it's interesting how, you know, in his day, he would type up his poetry. And sometimes he'd only have one copy. He'd keep the carbons on his typewriter. I'm sure the young kids out there are going, carbons? What's that?
What?
But, you know, and he'd send off his poetry to the publishers, and hopefully somebody would like it and pick it up. And, you know, it's a constant struggle. Whereas nowadays, you know, I like to write poetry and musings and different things, and you know, hey, I just throw them out on the Twitters and the Facebooks and, you know, whatever other social media, and I'm working on putting together a book, and I'm going to put it out on Kindle and PDF, and, you know, Michael has offered to torrent it on the Freedom Fiends torrents. So it's interesting to see how easily and readily available that content can be injected into the world nowadays.
Yeah, because, I mean, like, self-publishing and things like that used to cost a lot of money, and you wouldn't really have as much of a reach. But now, you know, you can publish a Kindle book on Amazon, and, you know, you can reach the whole world, you know, straight away. So it shows how that kind of thing has changed a lot. I mean, I've noticed as well, like you're saying, you put a lot of, like, when you write it, your stuff up, and I used to kind of do that a bit, and then I was sending off a lot of short stories and things like that, and I started to notice that for some reason, like, say, a lot of literary sort of based websites or, like, publications, some of them, like, consider that to be published, like, that, you know, so, like, they say we want unpublished work, but they consider anything that even appeared on a blog to come under the brand of published, which is kind of
really
interesting. So, like, you get a lot of them that won't accept anything that's been put up online, which is kind of weird, I thought, but, like, because, I mean, why would it matter if it was on a blog?
Well, I guess if you go by technical definitions, I mean, that is published. So,
but, like, you know, it just seems, I don't know, it seems a bit weird, but it is interesting how you can just have this reach, but then I suppose the bad side of that is you get the internet flooded with so much content, You know, and I had a friend who was talking to me. He was saying, like, he was talking about the old days, the early days of the internet. He said, you know, when it took ages to download something, so when I downloaded something, I was more likely to watch it then and there and get into it because it's what I had and it took so long. But now you can download stuff no problem, and there's so much choice. You kind of put things off a bit more, if you know what I mean, because you'd be like, ah, I'll watch that later. I can see that anytime. You know, I'll just get this. And it kind of scatters your brain a bit. I don't know if you're ever getting like that.
Oh, yeah, I totally agree with you, man. I mean, just look at the... Well, to go along with that, right? Back in the early days, you know, your average hard drive, if you had, like, a 5 or 10 gig hard drive, you were styling, you know? And right next to me, I'm looking at it, I have a 4 terabyte portable hard drive that's just filled with all kinds of goodies. And, yeah, you know, you're right. You'll download and consume this media, save it off YouTube or whatever, and you'd be like, oh, yeah, I'll watch it later. So I think you're exactly right in that respect. There is so much information out there. It's difficult to wade through sometimes.
Yeah, I think as well, see, with so much art that's out there, I think that can go one of two ways, because you do get so much, like, I mean, anyone who's got a guitar or whatever can be on YouTube, you know, within a matter of hours. But if you think about it, like, then that should push you to be better and different and more experimental, because you should say, you know, you should really think, look at how flooded the market is with all these people. It's not just so easy to put yourself out there now. And I'm surprised it doesn't push more people on to, you know, more experimentation and interesting music, because that's the only way you push forward and actually, you know, are different. Unless, I mean, there's two ways to be different. Let's face it, if you're a band, you're either really unique in your sound, or you have some sort of gimmick that people like, do you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, and I never thought of it that way, Dan, but I think that's very true. The availability of this media really has to drive the market in ways which would cause people to be different. Yeah. And that's a good thing. I mean, that's competition at work, I guess. But like you were saying, I think we were talking about it during the break, you know, everyone's just a consumer, and they don't, there's so, it seems to be that nowadays, with so much choice, there's a lack of originality. So many old ideas are rehashed, and that's not necessarily always a bad thing, but like, what were we talking about? Like the Spider-Man movies, right? You know, I mean, the old ones were like 8 or 10 years old, and then they put out a couple of new ones, and now they're doing like the Fantastic Four, and you see even with TV shows, you know, they're long and drawn out, and it's just like The Simpsons is a classic example. I'm a huge, huge Simpsons fan, and I gotta say, after 26 years, I'm kind of like, eh, okay.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I mean, it's just, stuff can go on for too long, I think. I think sometimes, I mean, there's some shows that, like, there was a great British comedy, it was John Cleese from Monty Python, it was called Fawlty Towers, and it was like a 1970s sitcom, and it was so funny, but they put out so little of it. I mean, there's like only like a handful of episodes, but in that kind of way, it never got time to go bad. You know, like, it's just, yeah. I'm not saying it would have gone bad necessarily, but you don't know that, you know. And I kind of like how a lot of it's you've only got that little bit of it, and it keeps you wanting more, but you can't ever get more.
Yeah,
it makes it better.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I was a big X-Files fan, and I mean, I used to the point where I would leave work on Sunday nights so I could be home and do the little ritual and watch the X-Files. And, you know, after, like, the 8th season, it just started to lose its appeal. It just started to lose that magic that made it such an interesting and good show. And I'm hoping that with the reboot of the X-Files coming up next year, they kind of tap into the original vibe of the show that made it so great. But I mean, you look at Breaking Bad, you know, everyone was so bummed out when Breaking Bad was ended, but where were they gonna go? It's a good thing that they ended it when they did, because where could they go at that point, you know?
Yeah, without it being ludicrous, you know. That's the thing, isn't it? Like, you sort of, Like, you can tell when, like, stuff's being hung out. I mean, I talked to you in the break a bit of, like, the US office. I bring that show up all the time. But, you know, even when, you know, Steve Carell was the main character playing the boss, I mean, it was all right when he left, but, like, there was no need to keep going. Like, he was the sort of main guy, but then he left to do other things, so they're like, ah, whatever, I mean, we'll get Will Ferrell for a few episodes, and then we'll get Ed Helms to do it, it'll be fine. And I just, it starts to kind of... It feels desperate for me at these kind of points, do you know what I mean? Because it rarely works when you take out one of the big characters. And it just feels like they're hanging it out and they're just... It really bothers me when shows do that. I would just prefer just to leave it on the cusp where people want more of it. I mean, that's what makes it one of those, you know, legendary shows.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, it definitely, at some point, it does... reek of desperation, and it lacks originality, and it's, you know, it's the originality that lures people in, that makes people take the time, like you said, out of all the media that's out there to check this show out. And once you lose that originality, and it's just about, and I have nothing wrong with, you know, shows and businesses making money, but when and that's what it becomes about, you know, it's all about ad time and making money, then what's the point, you know?
Yeah. And that's interesting as well. You talk about, you know, remakes of things. It seems like almost every TV show and movies, there's so many remakes of things that have already happened. And you just wonder, I mean, maybe, like, you could see if someone put a completely different spin on something, like, you know, take Baz Luhrmann's Romeo and Juliet, right? That's I know obviously it's not like a remake of something recent, but you know what I mean? Like, it's a completely different spin on an idea. But, like, a lot of these remakes are pretty much just basically shot for shot, or, you know, there's a little bit of difference. But the thing is, there's a market for it, because people are going to cinemas to watch this kind of, you know, it's not all garbage, but some of it's garbage. But,
like, a lot of it's garbage.
A lot, you know. But, like, that's the thing. And there's a market for this, so surely the consumers are responsible also.
Yeah, you're definitely right there. I mean, they're probably trying to target the younger generation, you know, us older generation that have seen it once or twice. Eh? You know, it doesn't appeal to us as much anymore.
Yeah.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Are you sick of peaceful people being locked away for victimless crimes? Instead of trying to get out of jury duty, consider taking it so you can do the right thing. A single juror with a conscience can send someone home to their family instead of to a jail cell. If there's no victim, how can there be a crime? And if the judge or prosecutor are keeping you in the dark, what are they trying to hide? You can vote your conscience instead of being a pawn of the state. For more information, Google jury nullification or check out the Fully Informed Jury Association at fija.org.
So, Dan, do you meow?
I don't meow often.
Yeah.
Only when I'm in a meowy kind of mood.
Yeah. The person that I turned on to the Freedom Fiends today, they were listening, and, you know, immediately they heard Derek J doing his meow, and they texted me, and they were like, meow, question mark? And I was like, yeah, the cats are our spirit animals, you know, our show mascots.
The first time I heard the Freedom Fiends, I was like, what's with all the meowing and the worms talking? No idea what was going on.
Yeah. Well, we should probably explain that, because I'm sure we're always having new listeners. You know, we meow because we like cats, most of us. We like dogs, too. Dogs are cool. Cats, animals, you know, whatever. And worms in the Freedom Fiends lingo is a play on the old 80s expression word, you know, which means you speak truth and you know, I hear you and I agree with you. And it's kind of our warrant canary. If you start to hear us consistently say word instead of worms, that means that we've been contacted by the government. So I'm going to say worms because I haven't been contacted by the government. I don't like the government. They just need to leave me alone.
I love the government. They're just so friendly and helpful, and, you know, they take my tax right out of my wages, so I don't need to think about it. It's great.
Yeah, yeah, they save you all the trouble, right? They're doing a favor for you.
It's a convenience.
Yeah. So, we're talking, and we want to kind of shift gears a little to still go with the theme of the show, which is a Frank Zappa quote, "The mainstream comes to you, but you have to go to the underground." We were talking about content creation and dissemination and all that. But we want to switch to concerts and festivals and the similarities and differences we see in the United States and in Europe. Now, I was talking to you earlier today, and I was saying one of my favorite things to do from 1997 to 2007 was to go to the Summer Ozfest Festival, which is a festival that has Ozzy Osbourne headlining, and, you know, a lot of cool metal acts, a lot of acts that got their start at Ozfest. And, you know, the show I went to, typically, I think it's like right around 15,000 people, you know, which for me is a pretty big show. But I've noticed that you cats over there in Europe, when you guys have festivals, you have festivals. You know, we're talking like 100,000 people.
You do get a lot of big ones, especially across Europe. You know, like you get Rockhamring and stuff like that. Download Festival in England, one of the bigger ones. They're kind of reboots of, you know, what were the old ones that were at, I think they were at Nebworth, and, like, you know, you had them in the 80s and the 90s, the old Monsters of Rock ones and stuff like that.
Yeah.
All those big classics. That's a Guns N' Roses video, and, like, part of it's footage from one of those big festivals. That's the, I believe it's a Paradise City video.
Well, I remember Pantera, I have the bootleg somewhere. Pantera did a set at Donington, and it was the Monsters of Rock concert, and it was really cool. It was back in like 92 when Pantera was just coming into their own before they got really big. Back when Phil Anselmo was thin and his voice was still young sounding.
Young sounding. You're trying to be nice about this, aren't you?
Well, actually, to be truthful, I like the newer Pantera. You know, after his voice kind of got a little deeper and gravelier, like Cowboys from Hell, their first album is a lot of good tunes, but I don't know, man. I didn't like his vocalization on that as much.
If you listen to, let me get it technical here, like a song like Cemetery Gates, when he's doing a lot of kind of vocal gymnastics. If you want to put it that way. I actually kind of like it, though. I do. But no, it's interesting to talk about like gigs and stuff, because we sort of, especially places like Glasgow, we've got reputations for having like quite rough, you know, concerts, if you want to put it that way. You know, like I've been to particularly, it always seems to be like some of the like metal shows and that I've been to have been quite, you know, quite aggressive. But it's more the folk shows you've got to watch out for. And I'll explain that after the break.
Folk shows, huh? That's interesting. I can't wait to hear that one. All right, we'll be back after this trip to the market. Worms. Metal worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
We'll be right back.
said before the break, I mentioned that in Glasgow I've been to some metal shows, and some of them were pretty aggressive, pretty brutal, but some of the folk ones were worse. And
that blows my mind.
I've got to tell you, and here's why, right? Because, so, like, it's not, like, you can think of, like, there's a sort of been a revival, you know, for the last, say, 10 years, and the idea of Celtic punk music, you know, you get bands like Flogging Molly and that use sort of traditional, you know, folk instruments along with distorted punk guitars and, you know, all the rest of it.
And they use grandpa's guitars.
Yeah, but, like, you know, but that's sort of on the punk end of it. But see, if you, I mean, I've gone to see, like, the Pogues. You familiar with the Pogues, Chandler?
A little bit, not much.
They kind of started this whole thing, but they never used distorted guitars or anything like that. It wasn't punk in that sense. They were more kind of folky, but the way they approached folk music was with a kind of punk attitude. They had that famous song, Fairy Tale of New York, you know, it's a Christmas song.
Yep.
That's always the big one. But I've gone to see them a few times live, and those gigs are crazy, man. Like, they're just crazy to the point of, you just wouldn't believe you're at a folk gig. Because I can remember them playing and a guy coming up to me and like sticking out his tongue, and he had like two pills on his tongue, and you know, when he was dancing and stuff, like, and you don't think I'm watching a folk band right now, you know. You don't get that feeling. But not even just that, I mean, here, like, there's a sort of, it doesn't happen anymore because of the law, but there used to get bands that would play here that were folk bands that were, say, had maybe a pro-IRA message or something like that. And sometimes I would pass places where, like, these gigs were going on, and you would just look at the crowd outside, and there was police, you know, just trying to calm people down before they'd even got in. So, like, and bizarrely, in a way, these folk gigs can be a lot more aggressive here.
That's
weird, doesn't it?
it really does. It kind of blows my mind, because, like, when I think of aggressive shows, I think one of the most aggressive, really wild shows I went to was Black Label Society. You familiar with them?
I am, yeah.
Yeah, I love Zakk Wylde. He's amazing. And they played at a club in Portland, Maine. And the club is only supposed to hold about 200, maybe 300 people at tops. And they had like 500 people in this club. It was packed, and it was so hot, and it was unbearable. I remember drinking various amounts of tequila before the show and then getting in there and just sweltering. Like, there was this one little vent, and I just tried to like nudge myself a space under the vent so I could get a little air. But when they came out and they played, I remember, like, the mosh pit was insane. And I'm not a small guy by any stretch. You know, I can hold my own. And I was having a hard time in this pit. I was getting knocked down left and right. And we had the like, I don't know if they were real skinheads, but they were, like, you know, baldy skinhead biker type guys. And they were getting pretty aggressive and pretty weird and mean. But I will say, compliment to the security people, like, a fight almost broke out between two of them, and you could tell it was going to envelop the whole pit. And right before it happened, two security guys were on these two skinheads, and they just had them, you know, hauled to the back of the club. I don't know if they kicked them out, but they got them out of the crowd immediately. It was just like boom, which is good, you know, because you're going there to have a good time. Like, I love moshing. I have no problem with moshing. But I like the mosh pits where, like, when I went the last time I went to see Black Label Society at a theater, you know, I got knocked down so many times. But I'm telling you, like, within 2 seconds of my butt hitting the ground, somebody had, you know, an outstretched hand and was pulling me back up. Yeah. You know, and that's the kind of mosh pits I dig, you know, where you help each other out. You know, you're going to get bumped around, you're going to get knocked down. That's kind of the thing. But you're all there to have a good time, and you help each other out. You know, if somebody falls and they get hurt and they can't get up, you don't want to just stomp over them. You know, the circle kind of goes around them and that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's always the better way, isn't it? I mean, because these things, like, in a setting like that, they can escalate very quickly. You
know? Well, I remember I went to Ozfest one year, and Slipknot was headlining the second stage. And I'm not a big Slipknot fan. I mean, they're all right or whatever. But I remember there was these kids there, you know, because I'm an old guy, right? I guess. I don't know. But there was a lot of these young kids, and they were doing this, like, I don't know what it is. It's not moshing, but it's like swinging their arms and their legs and doing, like, you know, judo chops and karate kicks. And I'm like, what the heck is this? You know, I'm like, this is not moshing. And they were, like, smacking each other. And I remember seeing, like, a couple of kids come out with broken noses. And I was just like, what's the point? You know, I was with my friend Dave, and he's a big guy. You know, he has Valhalla tattooed on his back. And I just was like, I was mildly inebriated and intoxicated on various things. This was back in the day. And I just kind of stood behind Dave. I was like, dude, You just stand here and watch all these crazy kids. I'll stand behind you. And, yeah, I couldn't understand it, man. I don't know what was going through these kids' heads doing all that stuff. I just wanted to get in there and kind of show them, like, you know, hey, this is how you mosh. But all the, you know, the 30-something crowd, we were in the 40-something and even 50-something, we were all just kind of the background watching these kids laughing.
It's funny that, isn't it? You find out as you get older, like going to gigs. I mean, I got to see Marilyn Manson in, 2012? And, I mean, if I'd have gone to a Marilyn Manson gig, you know, say 10 years earlier, I mean, the crowd was a lot younger, you know, but, like, the crowd was people sort of, you know, my age and a lot older than me. And you kind of notice that a lot of bands get to that point, don't they, where, like, their audience starts to kind of stay with them. But you find that, like, you know, the audience just seems to get older and older.
Yeah, I have noticed that, man. I'm like one of those people, you know. You know what was really a trip for me, though? I think it was when I saw Black Sabbath in 2001, the original lineup. I remember looking around, and there was such a diverse age group. I mean, I saw kids, I'm not kidding, as young as like 6 years old, to, you know, people in their 60s and all ages in between. And I was like, you can tell that's a hallmark of a great band when you have an age range in your audience that spans, you know, 45, 50 years.
Yeah. And that is, it really is. I mean, it's a testament to your, well, I'd say it's a testament to your music. We were, I mean, I liked Black Sabbath early on, but maybe not so much later.
Yeah.
That aside, you make me think of, like, I went to see Alice Cooper once.
Oh, I love him.
And I remember I was younger at the time. I was like a sort of, about 14 or 15, something like that. And
nice.
We got to see him, and, like, we were talking to, like, you know, some people, like, you know, there's this older guy who'd come up to us and he'd, like, said, oh, I've seen a lot of younger people here and it's great. And I remember looking, like, this older guy was loving it and he was enjoying himself. And I remember looking over at the other side and just seeing this guy standing by himself. And he must have been well in his 50s. And he looked so square. He was even wearing a suit, like a, you know, a full-on tailored suit, tie and everything, you know, shiny shoes. And he was middle of this Alice Cooper gig, just sort of standing there, you know, glasses, the whole lot, man. You couldn't have looked any squarer. And it's like, it almost looked like he'd wandered in by mistake. And then you see him singing along in the songs and stuff, and it was really bizarre.
He's like, yeah, man. Well, yeah, I mean, I took my kid, I've seen Alice Cooper a few times, and by the way, you want to see what a performance art show looks like? Go see Alice Cooper. That guy, I'll tell you, I took my kid to see him. It was her first concert. It was Alice Cooper and Rob Zombie. She was 13. Oh, nice. And we were literally, like, down front touching the stage. There was, like, one row of people in front of us. It was excellent. And, yeah, I noticed the same thing, man. There were some people that I would consider kind of square, you know. And there was a lot of people in there, like, my age and older, bringing their kids, you know. And the kids were getting into it. And I'll tell you, man, that cat can rock. He's in his late 60s, and he was singing Cold Ethel. And he was dragging around the Ethel doll. And he tripped and fell flat on his face. And he did not miss a beat singing and got right back up and just started strutting. I was like, damn, man, that's dedication right there, you know?
That really is, man. You hear about things like that. I remember there was a Marilyn Manson story like that. I think it was a hairline fracture in his ankle, and he finished, like, the rest of the gig, like sitting down, yeah. And then went to the hospital afterwards.
Well,
that dedication.
if you've ever seen the Nine Inch Nails, it came out as a double VHS called Closure, and later on, I think Trent bootlegged it, his own stuff, and released it as a DVD on the Pirate Bay. But there's a scene in that at a 94 show where he, you know, he was kind of crazy back then, and he picks up his mic stand and just hucks it. It ends up hitting the drummer, Jerome Dillon, in the face. And he's got this huge gash right down his face, and he's sitting there holding a towel to his face, and he continues playing the song. I'm like, wow, man. It props to you, because I think at that point I just would have been like, okay, I'm walking off the stage now. I just got hit with a mic stand and I got a gash like 4 inches long down my face.
Oh, it's the kind of thing, isn't it? Like, you expect that from your performer. I know I do.
Yeah, you really do.
It's funny, like, how sometimes, you know, you go into gigs and people do have expectations. Are you familiar with the band The Brian Jonestown Massacre?
Yes.
Yeah, well, the front man, or the only constant member, really, Anton Newcombe, has a reputation for being, let's say, a tad aggressive. You know, he has had in the past, especially they made a film about them called Dig, and, you know, he was like, at one point he kicked a fan from the stage and stuff, and I went to see band called Black Rebel Motorcycle Club, and yep, they were supporting. And when the Brian Jonestown Massacre were playing their support set, I remember this guy kind of walking up to the front of the stage and sort of laughing and nudging the guy beside him. And then he takes a full pint of beer and he throws it right over, you know, Anton Newcombe, this guy, while he's singing. And people are just kind of, there's a bit of a, because the band sort of stop and everyone's looking around and we're like, oh man, what's going to happen here? They just start playing again. He doesn't ignore him. And then like two bouncers are like grabbing this guy and dragging him out, like literally dragging him out. This was at this club called the Barrowlands here, which is an old ballroom, and it's like the bouncers, well, some of them, I've just seen some crazy bouncers there over the years, not to name any names, but it's that funny thing how that guy's got an opinion of what he thinks is going to happen, you know, because of the media and stuff. It's interesting.
Yeah, it totally is. I mean, they develop a style and a reputation, and the fans help participate in that, I think.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Hey, this is Squiscar Squiggles from Death Clocks, and you are listening to the Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
Tired of those old Freedom Fiends buttons? Well, the Freedom Fiends have new button designs.
As always, it's only $10 for 10 buttons, and you'll get these nifty designs. Buy sheep, for sheep, on sheep.
State speech is hate speech.
Two designs for Guns and Weed, the Road to Freedom.
Three designs for Fiend Phone.
Pipcot No Gov.
A Freedom Fiends Worms button.
And Ask Me About My Worms.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says Buttons.
And now they're bigger buttons.
They used to be 1 1/4 inch. Now they're 1 3/4 inch. Dan, they're bigger buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Meow. Meow. So Dan, how are we going to tie this whole thing up into a pretty little bow?
Well, I suppose the main thrust of the conversation has been sort of, well, we got into shows kind of later, but, you know, we're kind of talking about, I suppose, like how media's changed and stuff, and how traditional media has changed, especially with the internet. I mean, it's just, It's crazy. It's funny when Napster was mentioned a little bit earlier, and like I kind of remember when like I think it was it not Lars Ulrich from Metallica was saying like, "Yeah, we'll find all these people and we'll take them out to court." And you saw how unbelievably difficult that would be and pointless, and like what a waste of money, you know. So these things can't be stopped by traditional methods.
No, they definitely can't. And do you think that there's still that underground movement in, you know, art in general, you know, music, whatever, specifically? Do you think that still exists in the digital age?
I do. I think it does because, I mean, you notice that, like, live music doesn't go away. I mean, especially now, say when you have, like, for example, a lot of people who don't make money off records, they make money off touring. That's where the money comes from. And I think as long as you've got people that want to see live music, and I think there'll always be people that want to see live music, I think you'll always have these wee sort of scenes. Even you have these wee mini scenes within scenes, if you know what I mean.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah. I don't know, man. I love my iPod and I carry my iPod around, but there's nothing that gets me more psyched than, you know, grabbing tickets for a show and anticipating going to that show. You know, I've only hit a few this year. You know, I've hit, I think, Black Label Society and Marilyn Manson. I think those are the only two shows. I was going to go see Slayer, and I didn't get to go see him, and I'm really sad about that, because this is their last tour, and they're so great. I mean, honestly, guys out there listening, if you haven't checked Slayer out yet, do it, because they're just awesome. I mean, they really haven't...
I've never heard anyone on the radio make an impassioned plea to listen to Slayer.
Yeah. Well, there you go, man. That's part of being on the Freedom Fiends. But, I mean, they're so great because, you know, what was their first album? 83 or 84? And I remember listening to a Henry Rollins skit where he said that the great thing is, like, with Slayer, it's almost like they freeze them in blocks of ice, and then they thaw them out for every tour, and they just tell them it's 1985 all over again. And it's so true, because, I mean, they're still... Their music is new and different, and it's good. Like, I've loved every album they've put out in the... I don't know. Well, I've pretty much loved every album they've put out, but even the newer ones where a lot of fans were like, they're not like they used to be. Well, they really are. I mean, there's a little bit of different vibe to them, but that's okay. It just shows that they're growing. But they still just assault your senses to the point of, like, making your eyes want to explode and your ears. And I love it, man. They're great.
Slayer should hire you as their PR guy.
Yeah. A little late on that bandwagon.
I know. But I know what you mean. Like, it's that kind of thing where, like, even like, for example, like, I've been making music, like, myself. I've not put any of it online or anything, but I've been working on a lot of stuff, and I was like, am I just going to, like, record it and that kind of thing? Or then I was like, well, I'd really like to play it live. Then I thought, well, if it's just me, what would I do? Would I find a band and stuff? But now there's so many options. Like, I've actually been, you know, looking into different things with synthesizers and things, and I could actually play a set of these songs live myself with no one else. Do you know what I mean? Like, just in terms of manipulating different synthesizers and sequencers and things like that. So it's even the technology keeps moving forward so that things like that are possible.
It blows my mind. Like, I use Windows and Mac and Linux, but I, for media creation, I love Mac, you know, using Logic Pro. Every instrument you can imagine, if you have some musical talent, you're so good to go. I mean, the possibilities are endless.
So you've got no excuse not to make good quality media.
Yeah, get out there and do it, man. You know, if you've got that inkling, go with it. You'll feel better.
Listen to Slayer.
And listen to Slayer. Well, hey, man, it's been a great show. It's been great finally talking to you. Look forward to doing it again sometime.
Absolutely, then.
All right, you all out in Radio Land, remember, take care of yourselves, take care of each other. Worms.
Worms.